speaking today with David Robinson, who's running for City Council at-large number 2. David, first question I have to ask, why are you running for this office?
The purpose I'm running for this office is I believe that in the position of City Council member at-large, I'm really going to be able to affect positive change in the city of Houston. I think it's consistent with the public service that I've already provided to the city as a planning commissioner and more recently as the president of the Super Neighborhood Alliance. Been a president of the Neartown Super Neighborhood for 4 years and actively working in my neighborhood in civic capacities. But I do believe that the elected office is something that I can have a very positive effect in working with the mayor and with city council on a number of the challenges facing the city.
Talk to me a little bit about super neighborhoods. What role exactly do they play in the city, and what do you do as president of the Neartown Super Neighborhood?
Well, I think the role of presidents of super neighborhoods varies from neighborhood to neighborhood. In Neartown, where I've been at that post for these years, we've really focused largely on development issues and issues of transportation in our neighborhood. There have been a number of issues related to increased density in our neighborhood that have really focused on some issues about neighborhood preservation, that is both historic properties within our neighborhood as well as maintaining what we think is the valuable set of assets we have within the neighborhood. It was a few years ago while I was at the post that the American Planning Association awarded our neighborhood one of the 10 great neighborhoods of the year, an award that is a very high honor within an organization, the APA, that I've been a member. In some ways, it's a parallel organization to that which I serve on as an architect, the American Institute of Architects. And I think if in the way that I serve as the chairman for the Urban Design Committee for our local chapter, it's consistent with the role that I've played within the Neartown Super Neighborhood, focusing on the public realm, on issues that we share in common about our built environment. And I think in that regard, perhaps for those familiar with Montrose in the Neartown neighborhood, it's no surprise that we were awarded that great prize because it's such a wonderful place. We're incredibly endowed with wonderful institutions in the museum district, with the Manil Collection. The University of St. Thomas is an institutional member of our super neighborhood. But really what constitutes the core of our neighborhood participation are the 21 civic associations that are active within our community. That's Neartown. From which I, this past year, was nominated to serve in the capacity of president of the Super Neighborhood Alliance. So, officially, there are some 84 numbered neighborhoods throughout the expanse of the city of Houston, 640 square miles. We know how huge our urban environment is spread across Harris County and elsewhere. In that regard, there are 44, or some number close to that, of the super neighborhoods that are active on any day of any month. Those are formally recognized by the City of Houston and have been so since the Super Neighborhood Alliance came into existence, which was two mayoral administrations ago under Lee Brown. And within the Alliance, I think there are a core of very strong, very active, committed leaders who come from all across the city, from Clear Lake to Kingwood, and from Sugarland to points in A-Leaf and elsewhere around the city, really all points of the compass. And in that regard, I think my leadership, a couple of the things that I've focused on is to try to consolidate the strength of the organization and the relevance to what's going on in Houston. We've worked with the mayor, who has afforded us a new place at City Hall for our monthly meetings, which occur on the third Monday of each month. And that's in the evening when most civic leaders are available to come downtown. We meet in the mayor's conference room at City Hall from 6:30 to 8 o'clock, typically, is our schedule. And we've made it a point this year since we've been down there since January of trying to invite a different leader from a different department at the City of Houston to help inform our body of things that are going on in the City of Houston.
Okay. Seems like there's often a tension between economic development and neighborhood activism, since the former is about building new stuff and bringing people in, and the latter is usually about preserving what we've got and keeping things as they are.
Right.
First of all, do you accept that frame? And how do you resolve that?
No, I think that's very well said. It's true. The forces sometimes of gentrification are not the ones that all are looking for. You know, preservation is sometimes diametrically opposed to forces of development, and there has to be a balance. I think economic development, what we hear about in terms of densification, could just as easily mean the onset of a ghetto as it could be a higher and better use of our land and, let's say, an apartment complex or something that is, we hope, a positive development, a quality investment in our landscape that is a long-term prospect. That's where we've tried to be smart about differentiating between good and bad. And I think in a free market, an open, unzoned place like Houston, sometimes it is an absence of regulation that allows the best forms of development to occur. And I think along with that award that I mentioned a moment ago that we got from the American Planning Association, the city of Houston has also been highlighted recently for being unique among large cities in the United States in its lack of zoning, and how that has allowed for our city to grow in a very positive way. I think contrary to the instincts of a lot of planners and architects for that matter, I think in fact what we've seen is some dynamic and robust growth, albeit some ways in forms and fashion that are hard to anticipate.
Well, and some people would also say that the lack of regulations also can lead to development that isn't wanted, and such as the Walmart in the Heights area. You know, what should the city, what if anything should the city do to give neighborhood people more control over their own environments?
Well, the Walmart is a classic example that's playing out now in ways that still has that local community in tied in knots about what to do. And I'm very sympathetic to the surrounding neighbors, and I think to those that are looking for a different type of development there. I think with the 380 agreement that the city struck, and in the way that infrastructure was provided for that development, in some ways we forget that Walmart is not the owner, but is in fact a tenant there. It's obviously part of the deal that was struck, but I would contrast, let's say, that development to one that's taken place in the Neartown area, namely the HEB that's going in at the corner of Dunleavy and West Alabama. That's one that didn't receive a 380 agreement, and while there has been some friction, to be sure, with those who've been looking to preserve trees and the character of the surrounding neighborhood and a number of very important elements, I think I'm proud of the relationship that's developed there that has embraced the coming of development with an important and critical role of the involved community to allow them the input and seat at the table to truly affect the nature of the development. We had last year what I believe is a unique instance in the history of architecture where a surrounding community was afforded the time to actually vote for their preferred scheme of the architectural design. It came from perhaps the most celebrated architect in the state of Texas, if not the nation these days, from San Antonio's Lake Flato firm, which is at the very highest tier of our practice, and they provided for their client, HEB, three very nicely developed schemes, which were put to the community in a meeting that we chaired at St. Stephen's Church, a block or so away from the development. And those three schemes, with fully rendered drawings and models, came before a room full of several, and I think that is to say 400-plus residents and neighbors who voted and picked one of three schemes. And I think, in retrospect, it is, of the three schemes, the one that is most appropriate for the neighborhood. It's a few blocks away from the Manil Collection and truly picks up on a lot of the architectural themes there. And in that way, it's contextual. inappropriate for the scale of the neighborhood. And we also, I think in the process, maintained the ability to save these beautiful live oak trees that are on site. And we've done so, I would argue, in a balance with surrounding neighborhood.
Okay. Obviously, in the city, the big deal has been the budget. City Council recently passed a budget that for this fiscal year reduced spending by about $100 million that laid off about 747 employees. What's your assessment of the budget the council passed for this year?
Well, I think it's a good step forward. I think that, again, there are ongoing challenges, and I hope I will be working on those with the mayor and with the council, with the controller, with all the leadership downtown. I know the staff reductions have been very, very costly, both in terms of committed personnel, job loss. I'm talking about friends. I'm talking about people in departments that provide essential services. And I think some of the consolidations are austerity measures that are prudent and I think ultimately the right thing to do, yet they come with human cost. And I think in this economy, I am absolutely sympathetic. My industry in the architecture and the built environment has been among those businesses most affected by the current national and local economy. In that regard, the current budget is something that we have to continue to apply our finest tooth comb in terms of parsing out what is affordable to limit in terms of municipal finances, but the big elephant in the room really is the pension plans that we need to address in a very direct way with the three levels of those pensions. That's at the Municipal Houston Organization of Public Employees, as well as the firefighters and the police department. That really needs to be embraced in a way that is unavoidable if we're to get our hands and control on our current fiscal affairs.
If everyone wants the financial picture, everyone hopes the financial picture improves in the near term for the city. Assuming it does, do you think the level of service that the current budget is providing is the new normal, or do you want to see some things get restored as finances allow it?
Well, I think before we can even get to the point of restoration, we have to get to the point of normalcy. And right now we've got, for instance, in terms of neighborhood services, it was last week that the City Council confirmed the creation of the so-called Department of Neighborhoods, or the DON. And the DON, I think, again, in theory, is a great concept, but the details have yet to be fully worked out. And I think with all credit to the mayor's administration and those who have consolidated a lot of the services and brought them together in what I think is a model that will ultimately serve more efficiently the functions of local government that need to be provided as basic constituent services, neighborhood protection, citizens assistance. We're talking about mowing overgrown lots with absentee landlords. We're talking about basic crime prevention, anti-gang activity, providing community spaces in local civic centers, pools that have been closed. Some of these things that fall somewhat under the radar of what we need to be doing as a city are absolutely essential. And we've seen a big shakeup downtown with these services being brought into the mayor's administrative department. And in that regard, the Department of Neighborhoods has got a whole lot that it needs to do. And I worry that there may be more on the plate of that group of individuals than they can healthily bite off and chew.
Okay. Last year, of course, on the ballot, there were two propositions that affected the city of Houston. First one being the Renew Houston proposition. Did you vote for the Renew Houston proposition?
I did. I did vote for that, and I think it was a very tough decision, but I think it is one that I stand behind and hope to work on an ongoing basis to administrate fairly and equitably across all of our neighborhoods. It is a tough pill to swallow in terms of the additional fees, and I think we have done wisely to afford some relief to those Houstonians who cannot afford that in terms of those elderly individuals who are on fixed income. I think it's obviously been batted about a bit with churches and some of the school properties as to whether they should pay. I think that is all... It's all a matter of fact now in terms of how it is being played out. What we need to do now is make sure that the process and the policies are administered fairly. And more importantly, perhaps, is that the work ahead, the rebuilding of roads, the rebuilding of drainage and storm facilities are done with the prioritization of those issues that are most in need of repair or rebuilding, and I think there's various categories where that needs to be prioritized. Neighborhoods that are underserved, older neighborhoods, where things are deteriorating. The current drought that we're under is a, in some ways, helpful indicator of where our infrastructure is suffering the most, with the leaks that we see breaking at a record pace around our neighborhood right now. And we have got to be very vigilant with the way that we take care of business now.
Did you agree with council's decision to exempt schools and churches from the drainage fee?
Well, I personally wished that all would have been involved, but I understand the arguments. And I think at this point, understanding that that has gone forward like that, I'm prepared to administrate it the way it's come out.
Okay. The other proposition being the red light cameras, which is now finally, apparently, on its way towards a resolution. Did you vote to keep the red light cameras or to get rid of them?
Well, I did vote. I voted for the cameras to stay on, and I do that as a hospital building architect. I do that as someone who's aware of the consequences of those who violate the laws and hurt other Houstonians and send them to the overworked emergency rooms around us. I think that that was, from me, a perspective of one who doesn't run a lot of red lights personally. But understanding the will of the voters, I think that truly is ultimately the most important thing. I'm a firm believer in democracy, the democratic process, and it was, I think, with shared emotion with a lot of Houstonians that we saw it go back and forth over the past months. And it's been pretty excruciating, and I don't think we've seen the end of the pain yet in terms of the consequences of the lawsuit that's pending. And how much of a bill the cities of Houston and our taxpaying dollars will be paying into that contract to get out of it remains to be seen.
Okay. How would you assess Mayor Parker on her first term in office?
Well, I think the mayor has taken on a whole lot, and I think she has been a steady and strong leader for the city of Houston. I'm a supporter. She is a neighbor. She is a friend, and I think in that regard we do see eye to eye on a lot of issues. I know that she has had a significant number of challenges, and I know she needs the support of the council in terms of the tough road that she has to hoe. So I think I would give her a thumbs up. I know she used a metaphor recently in talking about her first term, which was that in many ways she was dealt a car that needed fixing. And in her first term, she fixed the car, and she described that in the second term, she wanted to drive the car, and she used the term real fast. And I want to be careful with that. I share her enthusiasm and her sense that we need to get on down the road, but I think we're at a fairly delicate place in Houston. I characterize it as one that is going in the right direction, but we are not a machine that's broke, and we don't necessarily need to fix it. We need to tweak things like a careful mechanic would do on a car. And I think before we drive it real fast, we have to make sure that it's sound and going in the right direction.
Okay. And what do you think her priorities should be for the next few years?
Well, I think she's laid the groundwork for driving the car steady. She's got I think a good staff in place, a good set of leaders in her department. I think she's had a strong city council, one that I hope to be a part of course, with my run for at-large too. And I think in that regard, I know there are some tweakings that have to go on with the machine. As a planning commissioner, I know development is a big issue. We've got a number of ordinances in front of us that I think council and individuals need to focus on. Chapter 42 in terms of a development ordinance is something that I think we're about to be hearing a fair amount about. There is a density ordinance that's before us that we know has something to do with the Ashby High-Rise Tower and in its infamy. And beyond that, I know that I do believe that there is a high priority with the Rebuild Houston program and how we can take care of our infrastructure and maintain our level of constituent services to neighborhoods. And all of this is while we very carefully take care of our citizens with public safety. And this is supporting our firefighters and our police and public servants. And as much as they are on the front lines every day, we need to maintain and make sure that they are provided for and compensated for in fair and equal measure.
Okay. And when people go to vote this November, why should they vote for you to be the next at-large number two council member?
Well, I do believe that I am the candidate with the most qualifications in terms of working and understanding the subtle nuances of how the city runs. As I mentioned, with 4 years that I've spent on the Planning Commission, with the years that I've spent really in public service, in leadership with the Super Neighborhood Alliance, and with neighborhoods in general, I believe that I'm that candidate. I think as a small business owner, also, I understand the pressure of these financial times. Making tough decisions is something I've done as a parent. It is something I do every day with my own business, and I think understanding how that relates to the overall functioning of the city is something that does it does distinguish me in a field of candidates that has got a number of bright stars.
Okay. David Robinson, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Charles.